I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we are on episode number 62, and we just watched Kill Bill.
Kill Bill. Pew, 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 pew.
We are watching what they call Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair.
Yes, we watched both movies.
Both movies, yes. Volume 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Tarantino considers it one whole film, so it'll be.
Yeah. Especially because it's been a very long time since I've seen either film, and so as soon as one ended, I was like, well, we gotta watch it.
I mean, Volume 1 just sets up the whole thing.
Yeah. So, do you think that the ranking on Letterboxd is just for Kill Bill 1?
It showed the picture for Kill Bill 1.
Yeah. But it did just say Kill Bill, though. Well, no, I guess it just shows the picture. They don't actually have titles underneath it. So technically we could have just watched Kill Bill 1 and gotten away with it, but we thought for the sake of the podcast...
And the sake of a conversation around the whole story.
Yeah, so we that watched we can, them both, yeah.
Yeah, beginning, middle, and end. So yeah, we watched them both. It's been a while for me as well.
Oh, it's been a long time for me.
You know, and especially Kill Bill 2.
Especially Kill Bill 2. I think that might only have been the second time I've ever seen Kill Bill 2.
Well, as we all know, mm-hmm. Kill Bill was written and directed by Quentin Tarantino. Kill Bill, officially screenplay written by Quentin Tarantino, but the story was done by Quentin Tarantino and Uma Thurman
mm-hmm.
during the production of Pulp Fiction. They had come up with the idea for The Bride. This is our fourth Tarantino film now? Fourth
yes,
and last?
It is, yeah.
We have covered Pulp Fiction
mm-hmm.
and Django Unchained.
Mm-hmm. Once Upon a Time in
Once
Hollywood.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And, oh shit, and Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, so this is our fifth movie.
Our fifth. So that means Tarantino is...
Tarantino's, yeah, the most watched director on our playlist or our list for movies, yeah. So that's a...
Which doesn't surprise me.
No, I mean, I'm kind of glad considering... for it, too. I'm glad that it was him and not, like Scorsese or like fucking, you
I mean,
know.
Scorsese's got four.
Scorsese's got great movies. But I guess I'm glad that it was Tarantino and not, I don't know.
Oh, as far as having the five?
Yeah. Because Tarantino movies are pretty easy to put down.
Yeah, I'd say the only other director, because Nolan also had four mm-hmm. on our list, and getting a fifth from him would have been fun.
Yeah.
I
don't know, there's something about a Tarantino movie that's just... easy to watch.
Well, and there's not a lot of them.
No.
There are only 9 official movies, yes. And all these other directors have many more. Nolan's probably the only other one who we could probably wrap up
mm-hmm.
his as well, but I kind of want to, even though it's not part of the podcast, we only have a few left that we haven't watched, you know, four.
Yeah.
We have 4 films that we haven't watched for the podcast.
Oh, what?
And it would be fun to go and watch the ones that we've missed, especially ones we haven't seen in a while, like Jackie Brown.
Yeah. The Hateful Eight, which I've never seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah, we'll get to them, but we are incredibly busy because of this podcast and our lives in general. That even time that we have set aside for other things, like trying to catch up on Andor before season 2 drops, has been damn near impossible. Like, we are busy, exhausted people, but I could take a nap right now. Like, if you had taken 15 more minutes to set this podcast up, my ass would be asleep on the couch currently.
Well, I'm glad I set it up a little faster.
Yeah, though. Oh boy.
The music for Kill Bill, at least for Volume 1, was composed by RZA from Wu-Tang, just in case people out there weren't familiar.
Presidents are temporary, but Wu-Tang is forever.
Other than Wu-Tang Clan, I'm not too familiar with RZA's work with film composing. There have been a couple movies that he's worked on that I am aware of. One film in particular that I remember renting from a Blockbuster.
Okay.
was Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai.
Okay.
With Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Because it's Forrest Whitaker who plays a samurai.
Sure.
And the cover of the movie stood out to me when I was at Blockbuster, and that's why I remember that I rented it. But yeah, he did the music for Soul Plane and Blade Trinity.
Okay.
Blade Trinity, I'm very familiar with. Soul Plane, I remember the trailer for, but
yeah,
I didn't watch it.
Did not see Soul Plane.
Afro Samurai is a fantastic animated series. I believe that was a Cartoon Network or Adult Swim production. The only other thing that I'm familiar with, he's got a decent, 27 projects as a composer. And the only other thing I'm familiar with is The Man with the Iron Fists, which is it was written and directed by RZA. And Eli Roth had a hand in the screenplay as well.
Okay.
And Russell Crowe and Lucy Liu.
Oh, boy.
And so Dave Bautista.
Great is what is this called again?
It's called The Man with the Iron Fists.
Yeah.
And I remember the trailer looks like a lot of fun, but it also looks like it's probably really corny. I mean, it's got a 5.4 out of 10 on IMDb.
Oh boy, I just pulled up this poster and I can say is, oh boy.
But I remember the trailer, and I remember what a big deal it was that RZA was writing and directing this and composing the music.
Dave Bautista has a golden arm in this movie.
I didn't watch it.
You know what?
The trailer. Everybody should just check out the trailer because it looks like it's a fun, goofy time.
Yeah, and RZA stars as the titular character as well.
Of course.
I gotta hand it to you.
Chun-Li.
Ghost Dog Way of the Samurai. I don't buy anything about Forrest Whitaker being a samurai. I love Forrest Whitaker. That man is an incredible actor. I just don't see him. Like, I'm looking at him dressed as a samurai holding a sword, and I'm still like, I'm not buying this.
You don't have to buy it. You just have to watch it and just be immersed in the world of
Ever see this once, one time at Blockbuster?
Yes.
I wonder how it holds up. I mean, for God's sakes, it's got a 7.5 on IMDb and an 84 on Rotten Tomatoes. Is this a good movie?
I remember having fun watching it.
Dude, it's on Max.
It's from 19... I think I watched it on VHS. I think that's how... I don't think I didn't have a DVD player. I had a DVD player, I think, later in 2000.
Live by the code, die by the code. I don't know. So anyway. It's on Max. You might want to give it a shot again.
Yeah.
But we have way too many other things.
We might have
to
one
watch
of those nights, like a timeline kind of night.
Yeah, where
we're
like, let's get hammered.
Watch Ghost Dog.
But not tonight.
With RZA.
We got hammered last night and my brain still hurts.
Part two of Kill Bill was composed by Robert Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm. For a dollar.
Paid for a dollar to do it. A dollar well spent.
Yeah. Although, I guess I didn't... Outside of, like, the...
There are a lot of needle drops.
Needle drops and the sounds from other things. Because, like, the... Nah, 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 nah part when she's, like, having the flashbacks of her attack. That's from something else, like...
Well, sure. There are other
But I don't
drops,
remember the music outside of that.
It's minimal.
Yeah.
On both parts.
Yeah.
But there are...
I guess I should have to listen to the soundtrack. Yeah, I just finished watching the movie, so I have not had time to do my due diligence.
Robert Rodriguez, this isn't his only movie that he's composed music for. He usually does it a lot on his own films, like Spy Kids 1, 2, 3, and 4. Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Sin City 1 and 2 were composed by him, as well as Planet Terror, the movie he did with Tarantino for Grindhouse, and Machete Kills.
All right.
Everybody out there, do yourself a favor and watch the Machete movies.
Machete is pretty great. Yeah. Like, the first one's pretty great.
They get goofier and goofier.
Doesn't he go to space?
That one hasn't been made yet, but everybody wants it to be made. Machete in space. But the first original Machete movie, very worth watching.
Yeah, no, that's a great film.
Cinematography, Robert Richardson, again, I mean, he's mm-hmm. he's the one that Tarantino and Scorsese share.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of them, yeah, every back and other forth, movie, back and forth, yeah. And it's worked out for Scorsese because he's won awards for it, but not so much for Quentin. But
yeah,
it doesn't matter because we all know how great Quentin's movies look. Rotten Tomatoes gave Kill Bill an 85% from critics and an 81% from audiences.
I could see this having been too violent for some people, and that's the only thing I can imagine. But I also kind of wonder, too, because, like, obviously, Rotten Tomatoes, I think, was around when this movie came out in 2003. I'm pretty sure it was, but I don't think that a lot of people had active accounts.
A lot of people weren't aware of.
And I also think that this is one of those things that when you set up your account for Rotten Tomatoes, not that I have one, but I would assume you go in and you pull up movies that you've seen and you rate them. And I feel like if you haven't seen the movie in a while, you shouldn't be rating it. I can go into my Letterboxd account, Movie Mingle Pod, and pull up movies that I haven't seen in ages and be like, I vaguely remember liking this. I'll give it like a 3.5. But then not going back and giving it a higher or lower. So sometimes when it comes to like I only say that sometimes when it comes to the older movies, I feel like the cinema score,
sure,
or the audience scores aren't as.
Because they weren't written in the time that
they weren't written in the moment. Came out. Yeah.
In the moment. I mean, 85 and 81 is not terrible.
No, it's
terrible.
A solid B.
It's still certified fresh.
It's not Tarantino's most beloved, but it's also kind of is.
It's my beloved.
Yeah. I don't know. People have a weird obsession with this film.
Letterboxd gave it a 4.2 out of 5.
Okay.
Metascore of 69, which, ugh. I mean, noise.
Yeah.
But, ugh. Like, what's wrong with Metascore? Like, why is 69?
Because nobody wants to use Metascore? I don't know.
And an 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb. That brings the average of part one to 80%. Part two had an 84% from critics and 89% from audiences. So
interesting.
Audiences were liking part two a little bit more, which is
part
weird
one
because.
Is still better.
Part. There. Anyway.
Well, I have my opinions on it.
It's all the same film.
But it's. The first part is bloody Tarantino, and the second part is talky Tarantino. And I don't like talky Tarantino as much as I like bloody Tarantino.
I love talky Tarantino.
I have learned to love talky Tarantino. And in fact, I enjoyed watching this movie more this time around than I did the first time I saw it. And as a complete film, I understand it. But I still prefer bloody Tarantino to talky Tarantino, which is odd considering my favorite Tarantino film is more talky than bloody, but still.
Letterboxd gave part two a 4.1 out of 5, which is just 0.1 lower. Metascore of 83, which finally Metascore gets on board with Tarantino, or with Kill Bill. And then an 8 out of 10 on IMDb brought that average to 84%. And then between the two movies together, an average of 82%. Both movies were made for $55 million, or the whole thing was $55 million and... Both movies were just listed as costing $55 million.
Oh, that's tough.
I don't know if he filmed the entire thing all in one go, and then that's when the studio said you have to split it up.
It was filmed simultaneously. So parts one and two were filmed together. So it could have been... this movie, $55 million seems
low. That's a lot. It's still a lot because...
For 2003?
Well, we just watched Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Which was 2010.
And that was made for like 95 or something, right? I don't know. It makes more sense to me that this movie would have been filmed for $110 million than $55 million each.
The interesting thing about this movie, as we were watching it, I was noticing, especially compared to other Tarantino movies, how much this movie is just filmed... on different sets. A lot of other Tarantino films, you go to locations and you're outside, and not everything is happening on a set.
According to Google,
it might be on
Kill
a
Bill Volume 1, the budget's $30 million.
So then maybe another 30 or 25.
Yeah, for Kill Bill
for
Part 2.
For a total of 55.
Yeah. I guess would make some sense.
All right, so maybe
Yeah, because it says that Kill Bill.
Maybe when they say 55 million, they're talking about the entire production.
Although it also says that Kill Bill Part 2 was made for 30 million. So.
Right. It
remains a mystery. You can tell when he's just filming out in like Los Angeles and Death Valley.
I was noticing there was a lot of beautiful, really detailed sets that they had made. One of the most impressive sets was the restaurant in Japan.
Yes.
That Tokyo restaurant.
Yeah, that had to definitely be a set because they had to have everything.
They had to do that one take through the entire restaurant.
Yeah, and have everything set up for all the different wire work.
They had a band playing. They had
people there. Yeah. Like, no, that was definitely a set.
They had fountains or pools or whatever they were. The movie did okay. It did well enough for its budget, I guess, and for a Tarantino film, even though we have talked about other Tarantino films that made a lot more money. The first part made $70 million domestically and $111 million internationally and $3 million on home media.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty decent.
Pretty decent. I mean, the $70 million domestically it's not doubling the production budget, but at least got over production budget. Yeah. And home media is kind of disappointing too. Only $3 million. Come on. My money was in that $3 million.
I know. I saw how blurry our DVD was.
Anyway. Part two made $66 million domestically, $88 million internationally, and $2 million on home media. So slightly less than part one. Which makes sense. I remember when it came out, there wasn't as much buzz about it, and it was not as well received, even though
it was well received. Yeah.
A lot of my friends were not as interested in part two as everybody.
I remember was excited about there part being one. A big like push, a big publicity push for this film. I remember before this movie came out, they talked about this fucking movie everywhere. I remember seeing the trailer. I remember it was on all the entertainment like shows like ET and fucking that other one that Billy Bush was on. I remember there being a big push for this film because people were like, another Tarantino movie with Uma Thurman, she's gonna kill people. Like, I was asking my dear friend Michelle last night if we saw this movie in theater together. And she was like, I don't remember. And I'm like, I don't remember either. I don't know if I saw this movie in theater or watched it at home. I know I saw the second one at home. But I don't remember seeing this movie for the first time. But I just remember that it was kind of fucking everywhere when this film came out. I remember they all made, you know, all the different like pop culture beats of this film that have lasted. The music especially. Like, I don't know. Like, I just have I feel like they put in a lot of effort to get people out to see this movie, which was odd because, you know, it was a Tarantino film and it was rated R. But I think it was also the first real mainstream Tarantino film, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
I mean, yeah, the previous three. Yeah, they're all kind of smaller films. Like, Pulp Fiction was a huge film, but it didn't set out to be. It made good money, but I don't think that people expected it to be the hit that it was.
It was still a small film. Yeah. It wasn't like this. It wasn't a blockbuster.
No, and I feel like they pushed this movie like they wanted it to be a blockbuster. Which, you know, makes sense. I could see that piece of shit Harvey Weinstein trying to be like, let's make all the money we can off of it. I mean, a giant piece of shit. Yeah, it made decent money.
Well, and it definitely, I think.
But it propelled Tarantino forward.
Tarantino got a bigger spotlight put on him. Because more people knew. Mm-hmm. He became a bigger name.
Yeah, because Jackie Brown came and went very quietly. Reservoir Dogs was like a fan favorite film. You know, like people are like, oh shit, you have to watch this movie. And Pulp Fiction was the big thing, but nobody expected that. So I think Kill Bill was the first, like, let's push Tarantino to the front and, you know, let's make this a big fucking movie. It didn't really work, but
I mean, it worked enough for his career.
Yeah. Like, Kill Bill, I think, is one of his.
I think more people
More people are going to think about Kill Bill than The Hateful Eight.
I think more people knew who Uma Thurman was, too. I mean,
and they knew that she was coming back to be with Tarantino after she had been in Pulp Fiction. So people were like, oh,
people were excited about that. They were excited about it.
Yeah. They pushed this movie hard.
I mean, let's say the whole movie costs $55.
Yeah.
Let's say both movies cost $55 and cost, you know, $110. It ended up the two parts.
Yeah.
Which maybe that was a smart idea to have them do two separate releases.
Yeah, nobody would have gone and seen a 4.5-hour long film.
Because $340 million by the end of it.
That's decent. That's real decent. That's a big hit, but they put in the effort to make it, so.
Well, the movie's also won some awards. 103 nominations and 30 wins for part one. 84 nominations and 23 wins for part two.
Okay.
Saturn Awards.
Who else was the Academy was not going to recognize him for this stuff.
Saturn Awards gave Best Action Adventure Thriller to Kill Bill Part One, and also Uma Thurman won for Best Actress. Uma Thurman was nominated for a Golden Globe, though, but Charlize Theron won for Monster.
Yeah, that was an unbeatable one.
Up that year was also Nicole Kidman for Cold Mountain, Scarlett Johansson for A Girl with a Pearl Earring, Evan Rachel Wood for 13, and Cate Blanchett for Veronica Guerin. Uma Thurman did, however, win two MTV Movie and TV Awards for Best Actress and Best Fight. Lucy Liu also won an MTV Award for Best Villain.
I could see it.
Volume 2, it won a couple more Saturn Awards for Best Action Adventure Thriller. And then David Carradine and Daryl Hannah also won Saturn Awards. Uma Thurman and David Carradine were both nominated for Golden Globes that year that it came out.
Uma Thurman does a great job in the second one.
Clive Owen won in Closer. Jamie Foxx was nominated for Collateral. Morgan Freeman in Million Dollar Baby, and Thomas Hayden Church in Sideways.
Sideways is a fucking monster of a film.
And then Hilary Swank won in 2005 for Million Dollar Baby. Nicole Kidman was nominated for Birth. Scarlett Johansson again for Love Song for Bobby Long. And Imelda
Stanton,
Stanton in Vera Drake, which I was looking at. So the first year for Volume 1, all those actresses, they're all white blondes.
Yeah.
And
that's
then
Hollywood.
And then the next year, they were all white blondes except for Imelda Stanton.
Who's a white brunette.
Who's a white brunette.
Yeah. Well, that's Hollywood for you, especially in the early
2000s. The early 2000s, yeah.
They really tried to push Scarlett Johansson on us, didn't they? They really just shoved her down our fucking throats until we choked on her.
In the beginning, but...
Yeah.
I mean...
Now she's just known for Black Widow.
No, she's known for more than just Black Widow.
She's not good at anything better than Black Widow, but...
That's not true either. Stop picking on Scarlett
Johansson. I will not stop picking on Scarlett Johansson.
She didn't do anything wrong.
No, she hasn't done a lot right, though.
So yeah, let's get to that cast.
Let's get to that beefy cast. There's a lot of people in this movie. A
lot of people in this movie. And starting off with Uma Thurman.
She is so pretty.
Heroine. I was trying to figure out how I knew her in the beginning. Like, what's the first thing I ever saw Uma Thurman in? And I think knowing how, like, the order that I watch a lot of movies in. Because I remember when I watched Batman and Robin, seeing her as Poison Ivy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's Uma Thurman. I already knew who she was.
Yeah.
Which means, looking at her IMDb list, the only movie that I'm familiar with that came out before Batman and Robin was Pulp Fiction. So I probably saw it, an edited version on TV, or somehow went to a friend's house and we watched their parents' copy or something, but...
For me, it would have been The Truth About Cats and Dogs, because I remember watching that movie with my mom when it, like, came out on VHS, and I just remember her being just so fucking cute in that. Before that, I mean, obviously, I've seen Pulp Fiction now. I haven't seen, I think I saw Dangerous Liaisons once, And I didn't see The Adventures of Baron Munchausen until I was much older.
Yeah,
so, same. Yeah, it would have... Well, Johnny B. Goode, I remember being kind of a big movie with Robert Downey Jr. and Anthony Michael Hall. But for me, it'd be The Truth About Cats and Dogs.
Another film that I didn't remember that she was part of and is her very first credit is Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, which is a Studio Ghibli film.
Is she one of the... American voiceover.
On the English dub. I really liked The Avengers with...
I did not enjoy that film. Ray Fiennes. I don't remember much of it, but I just remember being like, eh. Like, I remember her in the cat suit, because how do you not remember that? But the rest of it, I was just sort of like,
oh, meh. Man. Ray Fiennes is John Steed, and then Sean Connery is Sir August de Winter. And everything he talks about is weather puns.
Mm-hmm.
Because his last name is Winter. Get it?
Jesus.
Jesus. It's ridiculous, but it's just that fun spy James Bondy mm-hmm. kind of British film.
Yeah, she's really done some stuff.
She's been in stuff, but it's not...
My Super Ex-Girlfriend, which we talked about in the Scott Pilgrim episode.
Yeah. I liked seeing her in Percy Jackson when she's Medusa.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to remember who she played in that. Yeah. I remember the discourse around Nymphomaniac, but I don't remember. I never watched it. Yeah. Apparently, she's in King of Kings, the Oscar Isaac Is Jesus movie.
Yes.
Which, that cast has got Uma Thurman, Oscar Isaac, Kenneth Branagh.
Mark Hamill.
It's a fucking
I know.
Jesus movie.
Like, can we get that cast in a different
movie? Like, literally in anything else? Like I've seen, although I guess we never did get to see Luke Skywalker on screen at the same time as Poe Dameron, but we did get to see Poe seeing Luke Skywalker for the first time in The Last Jedi when he's walking out. And so we've seen, you know, they were there together, but... Yeah, we didn't get to see Luke Skywalker and Poe Dameron on screen at the same time, which will forever make me sad, as they are my two favorite.
Are you bitter about that?
I am a little bitter about that, because they're my two favorite Star Wars gays. Like, I love my boys. So.
Well, anyway, our next actor.
Also, Uma Thurman was the mom / president in Red, White, and Royal Blue, and that movie is great, so.
Oh, yeah. That movie is great. I remember kind of watching that.
Yeah, I fucking love that one.
Yeah, David Carradine playing our titular character, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Going through his list of films, there's a lot that I have not
239
seen.
239 projects.
He did a lot of shit and a lot of shit.
230. Well, you know what? He's not a leading Hollywood actor. Like, no. He's not this.
No, but he wasn't Dino Croc versus Super Gator.
For the longest time,
he was just a
character actor.
Yeah.
And then he started getting into, like, a little bit bigger stuff. And
Well, Kung Fu was huge for him.
Kung Fu was huge. And my dad and I watched the TV show, the spinoff mm-hmm. of the movie. That was how I got to, that's how I knew who Dave Carradine was. I don't think... I know I haven't seen a lot of his films, even though he's...
You know what we have seen so of much. David Carradine's, though?
What's that?
His grave.
Have we seen David Carradine's grave?
Yeah, because he was buried at... He is buried at Forest Lawn.
Forest Lawn or Hollywood Forever?
In Forest Lawn. And I know that we saw his grave when we passed by there. And it actually does look kind of familiar to me, so I'm pretty sure I've seen it in person. We have at very least have paid our respects to the man once before. I never saw North and South. I haven't seen any of the Kung Fu movies. I did not watch Crank High Voltage, although apparently he was in that.
Is that like the sequel?
Might have been. Was the first one just called Crank?
I thought so.
Oh.
So High Voltage, I was like, wait a minute, that must be a sequel.
He was in a movie with Rob Schneider called Big Stan. Definitely didn't see that one. And it definitely looks definitely like it takes place out. In a prison. So, you know, and I also have not seen Death Race 2000 from 1975. So, but yeah, those Carradine boys, they were all sort of troubled.
Vivica A. Fox, the first one that we see bite it.
Mm-hmm. Even though we are told at the beginning that Oren Ishii
has already
been killed. Yeah, yeah. But we don't see that till the end. I have not seen a lot of Vivica A. Fox movies outside of this and Independence Day.
Independence Day. And you can't forget her character in Batman and Robin, Miss B. Haven.
I did not know she was in a Batman movie.
And her name is Miss B.
Haven.
Haven. Yeah.
What?
Her. You could say her mother and father were Mr. and Mrs. Haven, and they named her B. So B could be, I don't know.
Wouldn't you, though, if your last name was Haven, and you could talk your wife into it?
You don't even say anything. You're like, no. Oh, we're having a girl?
Oh, her name
can
has
we name
to be
her Beth?
Beth, Belinda, Barbie. Whatever.
Whatever B.
Yeah.
Names
and then she can go off and just be a small-minded criminal with the name Miss B. Haven.
Breezy. I'm feeling hot.
I find that unlikely.
Okay. So my hair is brittle and my skin is dry. I'd weather blizzards just to have you. You're the most perfect man I've ever known. What do you say we heat things up?
My passion thaws for my bride alone.
Ooh. Talk about your cold shoulder.
Yikes, those were some shitty fucking movies.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, I'm going through. I mean, she hasn't done, she's done a lot, but she has not.
250 projects. Like,
that's done a lot that I have seen.
It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Good for her. She's out there. She's working. She's living the life. And I hope that she is a happy human being. But I've got nothing. I remember Booty Call coming out. Don't Be a Menace, which is what I tell my cat on several occasions that he, you know, I tell him not to be a menace in South Central. But, yeah, Vivica A. Fox, good for you, I guess. I really enjoy her in Kill Bill 1. We don't get to see a whole lot of her, but she is a lot of fun. What I think is sort of delightfully insane is that she wants Zendaya to play her daughter Nikki, if they make a Kill Bill 3, where Nikki goes after the bride. She wants Zendaya to play that role. And I'm like, oh, honey, she will not. She will not. That does not seem like something Zendaya would do.
You never know.
But I kind of feel like Zendaya would be like, no, thank you.
I don't know. But, chance to work with Tarantino.
Yeah, but I don't think Tarantino's going to make.
I don't think he's making
I don't
Kill
think
Bill
his
3.
Last film is going to be Kill Bill 3.
I mean, that'd be cool.
Would it?
I wouldn't hate it.
I wouldn't want it. Kill I wouldn't Bill want his last film to be an actual sequel.
Bill actually is alive.
Who are they going to get to play him?
One of the
other Carradines. There are a lot. There are a lot of Carradines.
Thurman's the bad guy now.
Yeah, and I don't want to see that either. And I don't want to see BB and Nikki either having to fight each other to the death or team up to
Bill's son. Bill died. Movie's over.
Yeah.
Make a different movie.
That's what I'm saying. If Tarantino came out and he's like, my last film is a sequel to one of my other films. That would be upsetting.
Like, oh, man.
Like, really?
I wanted you to do something original like you always do.
Really? I mean, technically, Kill Bill 2 is a sequel, but it's not. So, it's I would see, if he were to give a storyline over to people to make, like, an anime about the creation of the Vipers, I'd watch that. But I don't want to watch Kill Bill 3. So. Also, like, there's no way Nikki was a four-year-old, because four-year-olds don't ride the bus to and from school. But that's just my knowledge as a parent.
There's preschools that pick up kids on a bus.
She didn't look like she was in preschool. She looked like she was 8.
Where?
In the movie.
Oh.
Nikki is dropped off on from a school bus, a proper yellow school bus.
Okay, so
she's 4. She would have been in preschool.
Okay, that's
these are the small things that I notice and bother me.
Lucy Liu.
Lucy Liu, so pretty.
I have loved Lucy Liu forever.
I have never not enjoyed a Lucy Liu movie, but I don't exactly seek them out.
I'll just say real fast that first of all, she was in Red One.
Well, I didn't watch that.
And then.
And I won't.
And then No, Shazam Fury of the Gods.
Oh.
Furry.
Yeah, no, Shazam was... Fury of the Gods. Shazam 1 was a fun movie. Shazam 2 was an awful pile of shit.
And the 5.9 they're getting on IMDb is too high.
But don't forget, it's people didn't like that movie because they were woke.
Oh, yeah, that's why we didn't like it.
Yeah, thanks, Zachary Levi. I'm sorry that I was so woke that I couldn't handle your piece of shit film. Oh, God, that movie was terrible. But she's also done the Kung Fu Panda movies. She was one of the main fairies in the Tinkerbell films. You know, she has done... She was huge. I never watched it, but that Elementary show where, like, she played John Watson...
With what's his face?
I literally am looking at his face right now, but
he has three names.
Yeah, Jonathan Rhys Meyers.
No, that's that
anyways.
Is an
it doesn't matter.
That is an actor's name, but it's not that
and
actor.
I've never seen the remake of Charlie's Angels.
No,
but
oh my goodness,
I know
so
that
much
that
fun.
Was a huge thing. You know, Lucy Liu is great. She's very pretty. Ally McBeal was huge for her. I didn't watch Ally McBeal either.
Yeah.
Shanghai Noon she was in for like 4 seconds.
Shanghai Noon was fantastic, and she was great in it.
That movie is pretty great. I don't think it's held up well, but it...
Oh, it probably hasn't.
No.
But, you know, what movie...
It's definitely held up better than...
What movie in the last 5 years?
Than Rush Hour. Those movies are a tough watch these days, because you're like, oh, God, it's just all predicated on racist humor. It's really bad.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
They make fun of Jackie. They make both of them make fun of each other.
Yeah.
It's
a lot.
It's how you end up being friends, is by being racist to each other.
Sure, that's how it goes. Yeah. Lucy Liu was also in the movie Set It Up, which was the first ever Glenn Powell movie that I watched. It is romantic comedy. It is one of my favorite rom-coms. It's so cute. She plays the boss that they're trying to set up so that they can get some free time. I love that movie. It's on Netflix. Check it out. It's so cute.
There's a video game called SSX Tricky.
Okay.
And it's a snowboard game, and I used to play that game so much, but every time that you do a special move,
mm-hmm.
Run DMC's It's Tricky would start playing. It's time to rock around.
It's Tricky!
Yeah.
It's tricky.
But it was just like, it was a really fun game, and one of her characters was one of the snowboarders.
Of course.
Anyway,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was just a little
trip
down memory lane for me,
and
only me. Michael Madsen as
Michael
Bud.
Fucking Madsen. I thought he was dead. I was for sure that he was dead. Like, but as Caveman rightfully pointed out, I was thinking about the guy that actually... Tom Sizemore is definitely dead. Tom Sizemore was one of those men, incredible actor, troubled as fuck.
Sure.
And, you know, those types of actors aren't going to live forever. Michael Madsen, incredible actor, troubled as fuck. And so I'm a little shocked that he didn't go the same way. This man has been in a ton of shit.
345.
For God's sakes, he was
projects.
In Free Willy, and I fucking loved Free Willy.
Yeah, wasn't he the stepdad?
Yeah. I was like, I love the Michael Jackson song.
Yeah.
I cried every time Willy jumps over that berth and definitely doesn't murder that kid at the same time.
I used to think Elijah Wood was the main kid from Free Willy.
Who was that kid?
I don't remember.
You know what? I'm not going to do a deep dive into Free Willy. But if we ever did do a bonus episode on Free Willy, that would be a trip down memory lane.
Oh, man. I haven't watched that movie.
Oh, and since I was a child. I was a child. I watched that movie on VHS the last time I watched that movie.
You're probably.
Yeah. Hey, don't attack me, you dumb cat. Michael Madsen has been in a lot of great films. He's been in a lot of terrible films. For every Hateful Eight that he's been in Piranaconda. So, you know, and not another movie. Speaking of the not another verse.
You know what? If it pays the bills.
The man acts. Like, you know, he acts. And I am going through his filmography right now, I'm not seeing a lot of movies that I have seen that I have either liked or just seen.
But Michael Madsen's been doing the thing. He's always entertaining every time he's in, whether it's Tarantino or some other project.
Or My Boss's Daughter.
That when somebody writes him a good part,
he does a great job.
He performs well.
You know, he was in Wyatt Earp, which I haven't seen because I've seen Tombstone, and that's all that matters. He was in Donnie Brasco, which I did see once, but I was a kid and I was bored out of my goddamn mind. Like, you don't show a seventh grader Donnie Brasco and expect them to appreciate it at all.
One thing I'm surprised by is when I look at his IMDb page, his top four does not...
We've talked before about how IMDb does not always have an accurate top four. Yeah.
How is Reservoir Dogs not in his top four?
Yeah, how is that?
That is one of the most famous movies I think he's known for.
Yeah.
Is, and everybody knows the scene with him
dancing around
and cutting the cop's ear off, like, and then singing into it. Like, that is, and, you know, everybody knows
So what are his top four?
The Hateful Eight, which, yeah. I mean, I do believe he did a really fun job in. Kill Bill Volume 1, which he's in for 10 seconds.
Yeah, he has two lines.
Which is really weird.
Yeah.
Species.
Okay.
Which, I'll give him that. And War Games. And War Games is a fantastic film. I just haven't seen it.
Is that the one with...
It's with, what's his face from Ferris Bueller's Day
Off. Yeah. Like, that was, do you want to play a game? That's all I know. I only know about that movie because of when they reference it in Captain America.
It's been,
War Games. I've seen it.
I understand that reference. It's been a long time since I've seen War Games, so I don't remember Michael Madsen's part in it.
Oh, yeah, to have been a baby.
But I'm sure it's well worth it being in his top four. But I'm going to argue that they need to change Kill Bill Volume 1 to Kill Bill Volume 2.
Sure.
And change The Hateful Eight to Reservoir Dogs. Because even though his character in Hateful Eight is really great, his character in Reservoir Dogs is the more
well-known,
popular, and unforgettable scene. I love how... I mean, I always love how directors bring in their
They stick with their friends.
He's been not in every Tarantino film, but he's been in a lot of them. Next, we have Daryl Hannah as...
Also gorgeous.
Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
Driver, a.k.a. California Mountain Snake. Actually, I guess we... This is the first time I mentioned...
Yeah, we haven't referenced any of their snake names previous to that.
Well, nobody ever does in the whole movie except for the title cards for the most part. And then the few moments where Vivica Fox gets to say, I should have been Black Mamba. And then... then we get to see the Black Mamba actually attack Bud. Mm-hmm. But that's... Really the only time any snake names ever come into play.
Daryl Hannah, probably most well known for Splash. That was a huge fucking movie.
Huge movie. Great. Loved her. Had a huge crush on her when I saw that movie.
You want to know a really funny story about Splash? Splash made the name Madison popular for girls. Up to that point, there are graphs. Up until that point in 1984 when that movie came out, Madison... was not a name. It was a last name, but it was not a first name. And that movie came out, and all of a sudden, the popularity of the name Madison for girls shot up. So if
Madison being used as a first name was primarily due
to the movie Splash. Yes, isn't that funny? And now I don't think if you met a girl, I met a baby Madison tomorrow, I would not assume that she was named after the movie Splash.
Not anymore.
But
they're just named after.
The name. Like, yeah, I just like the name
People
Madison.
People just know Madison as being a first name.
My favorite Madison, of course, is Madison from the MCU.
Madison is with two N's, one Y, but it's not where you think.
Yeah, that movie popularized the name Madison for girls. And I think that's really funny. She was also in Blade Runner. I've never seen the original. Grumpy Old Men, Roxanne, Steve Martin film. Yeah, she's done a lot of work. Yeah.
No, she's great in Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And she's great in Splash. Those are the main movies that
she was in Addams Family Reunion, but I don't remember in what capacity.
I've seen Wall Street, but it's been so long.
Yeah. But she's a beautiful woman. I wish her well. I hope that she is a happy...
wish every one of them well.
I wish them all well. I hope they're all happy in their daily
Many
lives.
Many blessings to you and your family.
Except not to you, Scarlett Johansson. Never to you.
So angry.
Have you seen Steel Magnolias?
Yes.
I've not seen Steel Magnolias. Or I haven't seen it in so long I don't remember it.
It's you know, it was a movie my mom.
Yeah,
loved.
It's you know, the movie that your mom cried to in the late
80s. Yeah, absolutely.
It's the movie that my mom cried to in the late
80s. It's got every
fucking dollies in it, for God's sakes. Like,
yeah, no, it's got every popular woman in its time.
Julia Roberts, yeah. Fucking Sally Fields, like,
yeah.
Oh man.
Julie Dreyfus.
Yes. Who I know but don't know.
Played Sophie.
She's so pretty. And I know that she's done, you know, she was in Inglourious Basterds.
Who was she in Inglourious Basterds? Francesca Mondino.
Yeah, okay. It is not giving me the opportunity to actually look at her movies. Oh, wow. She doesn't have a lot of movies.
No, but she's known for Inglourious Basterds, yeah. Kill Bill Volume 1, Kill Bill Volume 2, and Kill Bill The Whole Bloody Affair.
Yeah. She has not done a lot, but, you know.
I mean, I enjoyed her in mm-hmm. her short time on screen. I would have.
Yeah, it's funny how she died, I guess. Yeah, she was there. After that, after Julie Dreyfus, there's a lot of character actors in this film. There's a lot of Asian actors that are known for their, like, kung fu movies, like Sonny Chiba. Michael Parks, who is a beloved character actor to many people, including Quentin Tarantino and Kevin Smith. His son, James Parks, was also in the movie. And, yeah, going down from there, I don't recognize a whole lot of these people. I do know that Uma Thurman's stunt double was Zoe Bell, who we have seen in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She's done a lot of stuff with Tarantino. And, yeah, it's a pretty solid cast overall. But in true Tarantino fashion, it's like your main people and then a lot of character actors that you either know or do not know.
Yeah, a lot of character actors, faces that you're just like, oh, I know that person. Oh, mm-hmm. I know that person.
Ricardo Montalban was supposed to be the second Michael Parks character, the Hispanic man in that the bride goes and visits to find out where Bill is. That was supposed to be Ricardo Montalban, but he wasn't available to come in for the read-through of the script, and Tarantino liked how Michael Parks did it, because Michael Parks read that role, and, you know, because the other guy wasn't there, and so he just had Michael Parks do it instead of Montalban, which is, I find kind of funny, and probably also a bit of a sting to Ricardo Montalban. I bet he would have enjoyed being in a Tarantino film.
Probably one of the most famous martial arts performers in Asian cinema, Sonny Chiba, has been making movies for decades, since the 60s, I think. And
I never watched kung fu movies growing up. That was not my genre. It was not my cup of tea. It was not something that my dad or my brothers watched. So while I recognize a lot of these titles just from being a pop culture nerd, I have not seen a single one of these movies outside of Kill Bill. I didn't even watch Tokyo Drift, so. And supposedly he was in that. So. Yeah.
He was in the first Fast and Furious movie mm-hmm. as one of the characters' uncles, and it was like the director was essentially just paying homage to him.
Yeah.
But this guy has been, like, when I watch Stuntmen React,
mm-hmm.
a lot of those, the Asian cinema mm-hmm. kung fu movies that they show all the crazy stunts that a lot of them are doing, Sonny Chiba, in a lot of those movies, is either the stunt coordinator or a main character.
Mm-hmm. He's gone now. He died in 2001, 2021. He passed away.
And his
at 82.
And his granddaughter, I believe it's his granddaughter.
I think it's his daughter.
Or, is it his daughter?
Yeah. She's the other female of the Crazy 88s, not the one with the ball and the spikes.
Right.
But
she's the third one to when the group of them are descending the stairs at mm-hmm. the beginning. She's the one female of the group and is the last one to eat it before Gogo,
goes after her.
Gogo's after her. Very talented man, history making for Asian cinema.
I guess then since we brought up Sonny Chiba, we should also talk about Gordon Liu, because he was essentially like the Chinese Sonny Chiba. You know, he's also done his fair share of a lot of Chinese, like, warrior films, Shaolin movies and whatnot. Another character actor that Tarantino loved growing up that was able to put into one of his movies. And that fucking crazy-ass beard, you know, of his that he's always, like, rubbing and pulling to the side. But, you know, it's I like that Tarantino has such a appreciation for Asian cinema that when he pays homages to it, it's not done in a like tacky Western American way. You can tell that it is done with love and respect because of how, you know, because that's where Tarantino is coming from. He's not making fun of these
people.
He's
paying homage to them because he loves them.
Because he loves them.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see because oftentimes, you know, Asian characters can be portrayed as all sorts of derogatory ways, like the fucking Rush Hour movies, you know, or just any Asian woman ever put on screen. I mean, the sexualization of Asian teenagers and Asian young Asian girls is such a fucking problem in Hollywood and always has been. So it is nice to see Tarantino come in and show some love to these stories that he loved growing up. And it's nice to see like that handled, I guess, more deftly than other people have in the past.
Another actor that both Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, Kevin Smith all really admired and respected was Michael Parks. He plays Earl McGraw in Part mm-hmm. 1, the sheriff, and then Esteban Vallejo in Part 2. And, you know, he has a great opening scene. He gets to do a great opening scene in the movie From Dusk Till Dawn. He's the sheriff that comes in and talks to the guy behind the counter.
It's been so long since I've seen From Dusk Till Dawn.
That
was a movie that I was like, oh, sure, I'll watch it. Like, I like George Clooney and this other weird-looking guy. And, oh, they filmed it in Victorville. And, like, I remember that. I remember that they rolled through. And then, like, you know, a third of the way into it, you're like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. It's a vampire movie.
What the hell is this?
It's a vampire movie.
Oh, it's so much
I don't
want to
watch this anymore.
John Hawkes is the
I love John Hawkes.
Actor that
John
he's
Hawkes is such a
acting
great
opposite.
Character actor.
Jesus H. Christ, Pete. When you gonna learn that microwave food will kill you faster than a bullet? Some of them damn burritos ain't good for nothing but a hippie. When he's high on weed.
So anyway, he was just another one of those legends. 144 projects, and he died in 2017, and
there's a documentary that just came out about his life, or that is in the process of being shopped around.
And in case you're wondering who he is with Kevin Smith, he was in Tusk and Red State,
which I haven't seen either of those films actually, but I would watch Red State, but I don't think I'm ever gonna watch Tusk. And I love Kevin Smith. We're gonna go see him soon in person and watch Dogma with him. But I still can't with, like, I can't with Tusk. I'm sorry. That and Yoga Hosers, those are two films that I'm like, I love you, but there is a point where I can't follow you down that road, buddy.
Tusk is better than people give it. It's.
Is it?
It's, no, it's absolutely ridiculous, but, but it's, I don't know, it's fun.
You know, it kind of pisses me off that the men who would assault unconscious women in comas would definitely wear crosses. Like, that is such an on-point bit of social commentary that I'm not even sure if Tarantino ever meant to do, like, for a reason. But Buck, who likes to fuck, is wearing a cross. And of course he would sell out unconscious women to creeps.
Not just sell them out, but he himself.
Yeah, he himself has also assaulted them. Yeah. Like, that just makes all the sense in the world and is fucking horrific. Well done on Tarantino for calling out the fact that those men are also quote-unquote Christian. So, that was one of the things that I was like, when I rewatched it.
It was fun, and always is fun, seeing them get their comeuppance. Except I wish the first guy, you see his lip get stretched, and then he's got a bloody face after that.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like I needed, like, I don't know, like a throat ripped out or something.
Yeah, like she should have ripped his throat out or something. I also, I guess I'm tired of the idea that, you know, any strong woman has to be assaulted in that way in order to
weaken her.
Sure. It's always so upsetting to me that, like, that has to be a plot point. But that was a pretty big thing back in the early 2000s. It is not so much anymore. But yeah, it's just like, okay. I had forgotten how much I liked how this movie is shot.
Oh, yeah.
This movie is shot in very, like, the cinematography is great. I forgot completely about the animation that gives us Oren's backstory. When the airplane is flying in over what is clearly a model of Japan, like, all of that shit is just so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. And, yeah, I remembered a lot of this film, but I had forgotten a lot more of it. And that was definitely something that, those are the parts that I enjoyed. There's also not as much feet as I remember.
There's a lot.
There's a lot of feet.
There's a good amount. Yeah. I mean, we've seen his movies that have more.
Yes.
Which is why this doesn't seem to be a lot.
No.
But there's still.
There's just so much, so many amount, fucking.
Especially between the two movies put together. Yeah.
Feet.
Even something as simple as, even though it's a really cool shot and really awesome fight, but when Ellie is leaving Bud's trailer and Uma Thurman's already attacking her, and you see just the feet
coming at her.
But it's just these dirty ass feet.
Tarantino.
The camera just focused on
it. Makes me wonder if he's got.
But it's a really neat shot.
Does he have his own secret reel that's just every foot he's ever put on
he's
film?
Just edited it all together.
All the feet.
Just and hours of footage.
God, I don't want to know what he does with that.
I really love Daryl Hannah's outfit. I like how she's trying to be, like, to blend in. But it's, like, this really...
the nurse outfit is the stereotypical
nurse outfit. But to top it off with the eye patch with the red cross on it. It was great.
Must be hard to work with an eye patch on.
It was great, though. Yeah. It was so...
Oh, the outfits. I mean, that yellow jumpsuit that Uma Thurman wears later. It's just... I mean, I know that that's from a Bruce Lee movie, but it's still, like, she looks so fucking good in it. It looks so good with the blood on it. You know, that yellow and that red is so nice. This film is spectacular. I would have said, up until... I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I would have said that Kill Bill was, like, my favorite Tarantino movie.
I had both posters in my room.
Of course you did.
The Kill Bill 2 is, of course, well, there's really only one variation, I think, of the Kill Bill 2 poster.
She's just in a different outfit.
Yeah, it's red and yellow. The background's red and yellow, and then she's in a black outfit with the sword.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Kill Bill 1 poster I had was the one with the katana with the hand holding it from the top, and then it just a little handkerchief or something, just red Kill Bill on it. I don't know. It was, I remember my mom saw that poster and she's just like, I don't know. It says kill on it.
Even though you were in your 20s when this movie came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's my mom.
Yeah, that is.
You live under my house, under my roof. Then I was able to convince her, oh, it's not that bad. He's the villain.
Yeah. I'm not surprised that you love this movie so much, seeing as how into Japanese culture you were growing up.
Yeah, I mean, 2003 is when the first one came out. So 5 years before this movie came out, I was in Japan.
Yeah.
So, of course, I was still probably riding that high. No, I had a wonderful opportunity back in 1998 when I was 17 years old. To go to Japan for 2 weeks, had a blast. Always dream of going back again and seeing what that country looks like now.
Mm-hmm.
When it seemed like the future.
Yeah,
it seemed like I like went to the future.
A future America, well, especially, we never have,
especially in Tokyo. But you know, because I also went into the outer
countryside,
smaller towns, and more country. Very dense wood. looks more traditional, or more probably what it looked like.
Ancient.
More ancient, but modern at the same time. It's not like they just keep everything ancient looking. But and then you go to Tokyo, and it feels like you have been zipped into the future.
I would love to see Japan. For the longest time, I was always like, I mean, I would go, but it's not at the top of my list. It is definitely getting up to the top of my list because it seems like a really wonderful country. And also, I want to eat the food there. Not a big fan of fish, not a big fan of sushi, but I am a huge fan of curry. And they've got their curry on a lockdown over there that even though I've only had like a, you know, a pale in comparison fast food version over here, it's still one of my favorite meals.
There's
like
some
fucking pork katsu with curry.
They
oh my
so
God.
So many different varieties
so good.
Of food.
And the way that they put eggs on everything, I am all fucking for. So I'm actually obsessed with a TikToker called Japan Eat. And all of his little videos, like every time I watch them, I'm just starving afterwards. But we, you know, we'd have to take our eldest to Japan too, because they're pretty obsessed with that place also. And I guess then we'd have to take the younger one too, because how do you take just one child to another country? He'd be pretty pissed. True. Yeah.
You know, the title card said it took 13 hours for her limbs to wake up, which I get atrophy. Takes forever. I mean, it took Neo a lot longer.
God, we have to watch that soon. I'm
we
not
do.
Excited.
Yeah,
ugh.
No, it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up.
How did nobody find his
well, that's the thing.
Bodies
like,
in 13 hours?
That's what I'm saying, is in 13 hours, somebody would have discovered these two bodies.
Yeah, and a missing coma patient.
Yeah, and raised alarms and...
And at least gone and checked out his truck.
And we all know that his coworkers know what truck is that he drives to work.
If I drove the pussy wagon to work, my bosses would pull me aside and be like, you cannot bring that car.
Cannot bring that car here.
Your bosses would have shit fit. If anybody rolled up in the pussy wagon, which Tarantino still owns, and I love that, if any like
he's
if,
the only one who can
yeah,
own it,
yeah, like
because anybody else it wouldn't work for.
It wouldn't work.
No matter what kind of douchebag you are,
fucking douchebag.
You pull
buck.
That. You can't even be. There's no way that you are an orderly or a nurse or any work. At any kind of profession.
No. Especially where you care for other people with pussy wagon written across the side of your car. Like, oh my God.
And one of my favorite parts of when they're introducing the pussy wagon is when she's rolling down in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
And she stops and the camera's still on her face. And she looks at it like she's like, is that the car? And she has to look at the keys one last time. Yeah, it says pussy wagon on it.
It says pussy wagon.
And then the camera shows you the back of this ugly truck.
Oh, God.
So ugly.
But fucking...
Pussy wagon.
Pussy wagon. Oh, God.
Oh, man.
I'm glad she killed him. Or at least I hope she killed him.
I mean, he's not standing on his own feet anytime soon.
But, oh, Jesus.
That's how Achilles died. We talked earlier, cinematography in this is
so good.
So good. Yeah. And between the two films, he gets to do a variety of things.
I love the use of black and white, obviously to kind of get around how bloody and gory the movie is.
Sure.
But also just, it feels so good when it switches to black and white. I love that, you know, the church massacre is all in black and white. Yeah. I think that that's perfect.
Yeah, anything in the past,
yeah.
I always feel is nice having it in a different...
I even like in the second one when she's driving down the road and it's, you know, clearly it's, you know, she's on a sound set and they're just, you know, showing the footage going past her. But the footage is in black and white, but the car and her and her sword and everything are all in color.
Which
and I just think
the same thing that he did in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. So fucking pretty.
Color inside the car and then black and white outside.
Yeah.
I love the different styles of cinematography, whether it was grainy. Or black and white.
It was all grainy.
Well, no, but,
there are grainier parts
when you're
where
watching
it's supposed
this,
to be.
When you're watching
grainier.
This in the theater,
yeah.
There are moments that are like, he used a different type of film.
And of course,
and
Caveman, being the fucking Tarantino nerd that he is, pointed out the song that plays at the beginning. you know, that we also hear in all of his other films. And
Then you have the anime in the middle.
The anime is so fucking neat.
Not in the middle, but it during Lucy Liu's introduction.
That anime felt so much like watching like a Todd McFarlane anime. Or I know it's not him.
It's not Todd McFarlane.
But it gave me that, and then it gave me like Aeon Flux sort of vibes too.
I understand what you meant. There is a famous animation house who did that animation. Mm-hmm. They have worked on a lot of things. The production company that produces that animation, they worked on the Ghost in the Shell anime,
mm-hmm.
which is a massive among anime nerds, massive film. And then they also did a couple of shorts for the Animatrix.
Mm-hmm.
One was called A Detective Story, and the other one was called A Kid Story.
He knows this off the top of his head, folks. He is just straight up looking at me while he's reciting all of this nerddom. I never got into anime very much. It's just not really my cup of tea, which is fine that it is other people's, but like our eldest loves anime and that is something they get to share with you, and I'm really happy for that. But I couldn't tell you the difference between the different houses, the different things they've done. Like I've seen like four Miyazaki films, like if even. So it's not my, but I never dislike it. I just never got super into it. And also supposedly the guy who kills Orenishi's father is Bill. According to David Carradine,
that's what I always took it as. That skinny,
mm-hmm.
Long hair in his face
the
guy.
The jewels all over. And
I figured that was how Bill and Oren got a relationship from, because everything Bill does is very manipulative. I can only see him killing her parents and then hiring her later.
Yeah,
the same way he manipulates.
Bill is a piece of shit.
He is, yeah. And the way he manipulates
the bride, Beatrix, yeah,
kiddo.
Silly rabbit, tricks are for kids.
Like he's super manipulative of her,
mm-hmm.
and he. I mean,
and also just the way that he's a much older man taking advantage of much younger women,
and it's his brother and three young women.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Charlie's Angels if Charlie's brother really wanted to join in.
Yeah,
and
but they're out there murdering people for hire.
Right.
And,
I mean, at the end when she's crying on the bathroom floor.
Mm-hmm.
At first, you're like, this guy was like shot her in the head while she was pregnant.
Yeah,
because
with his
baby. Because he was upset that she left him, mm-hmm. essentially, even though she didn't belong to him. But that's the thing. He treated, I think, everybody, but especially Beatrix, as property,
mm-hmm.
not just, somebody that he wasn't. I think he was just infatuated with these people. It's fitting that this movie was produced by
Harvey Weinstein,
because I'm getting Harvey Weinstein vibes off of Bill.
As a young woman who's been manipulated by older men in her life, it is it's a weird thing to. It's weird because back in the early 2000s, it was still somewhat acceptable, if that makes any sense. It was still like, oh, he's older than you. He's in a position of power over you. You could get him. Like, I think he likes you. Like, it's love, blah, blah, blah. And then, now after everything that has happened and gone on in life, now we've progressed somewhat as a species, it's like, oh, shit, that wasn't okay. It wasn't okay for my dad's older friends to talk to me the way that they did. But at the time, I was flattered because I was young and stupid, and now I'm like, ew, gross, ew, oh God. If anybody spoke to my child that way, I'd rip their throat out in front of them. Like, so, that was weird for me to watch that, but it was fitting to watch him die. I do like the trivia that they were supposed to have a moonlit sword fight on the beach in her wedding dress. Like, that was a planned option for the end of the film, but they were kind of running out of budget and time. Yeah. And so instead they just had what I think is a more intimate and a more fitting death for Bill, which is it's not the five finger death punch, but it's the 5-point exploding palm technique or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of satisfying in that moment where they have to, you know, where they essentially have their goodbye, where he knows he's been killed and is just taking his last few moments.
It's a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
I prefer that to
a big battle sequence.
Yeah, yeah. As much as he's a son of a bitch and as much as he's an asshole and you can't wait for him to die, it's a really beautiful moment of him knowing that she got the best of him.
Mm-hmm.
She bested him, and he's going to take it like a man and stand up and take his 5 paces.
Especially also because, you know, this particular technique that she uses on him was like a mythical technique that her master...
But also super secret.
Yeah, like the master that he sent all of his girls to.
And he believed that it was something that only he knew how to do and would never tell anybody, because he didn't tell Bill.
No.
And he never told another one of his students.
But he told her.
He told her and she never told him.
Yeah. And I love that. I kind of love that a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, it was,
Uma Thurman is so fucking
I remember watching that ending and I'm just like, that is awesome. That's an awesome way to end it, that she got to learn. I like that we're never even clued into a possibility of him teaching. That was just some story that Bill was telling her before she was even being trained.
Yeah.
And like, you better respect this guy because he can fuck you up.
Yeah.
And I mean, Ellie found out the hard way.
Yeah. When Beatrix plucks out Ellie's other eyeball,
that was
she
so awesome.
Uses the arm that is owned by her master. That, you know, she uses her dominant arm that now belongs to him, because he's like, this arm belongs to me, and when it's strong. So she uses that to pluck out her other eyeball.
It's a way of a revenge.
Yeah, which I think is also wonderfully poetic. That entire sequence in the trailer is great. The fact that, like, the trailer isn't big enough for the sword to come fully out of its scabbard.
The fight choreography in that small space was really fun.
In the whole shebang.
The whole movie, oh, sure.
Is so good. I was going to ask you what your favorite scene is, but one of my favorite scenes in all of Kill Bill is not only the entire fight, because it's just spectacular. Excuse me.
The trailer?
But, no, it's in the restaurant where she's being surrounded by the crazy 88s, and she pulls out her sword and sort of lunges back, and they all kind of, like, separate out. You know, I think the choreography the music, like that the, is so fucking good.
The guitar
good.
And the boing, 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 boing.
It's just great. Do you have a favorite part in this whole shebang?
Oh, I mean, there's so many great moments and great...
Or a favorite fight sequence, maybe, because the one in the restaurant's fine.
Yeah, the whole sequence in the restaurant is one of the most memorable things about the whole movie, because it's such a big fight. I don't know how many minutes it lasts, but it's like...
Oh, it took
30-40 minutes, like
from it the took moment, 8 weeks to film, which is how long Pulp Fiction in its entirety took to film.
Like from the moment that the bride walks into the restaurant and everything's happening, and the camera movements, the great one-er that they
do. Oh, it's such a good one-er. Although, I mean, not the best one-er we've ever seen, because very recently we watched the greatest one-er we've ever seen.
For the studio on Apple TV+.
Jesus Christ.
If you guys haven't watched the studio, watch the first 2 episodes, and if you're not interested after that, fine.
That's fine. But the second episode...
By the time you get to the second episode, which is titled The One-er...
And it is entirely a one-shot.
A one-shot with no hidden edits...
There had to have been some hidden edits.
They said they ran through it. They had to run through it. But the even more technical part about the whole one-er
is because it was fucking set at magic hour.
They had to time it, and it's even mentioned in the episode about
doing
those things and not having hidden cuts.
Yeah,
they had to time it so that by the time he's driving down the driveway, the sun has set, but not before and not too late after. It perfectly.
That show.
That kind of timing.
Yeah.
And the amount of rehearsal.
Martin Scorsese. Yeah. And the Kool-Aid movie. That movie is so. That show is so inside baseball. When it comes to Hollywood.
It's perfect for this podcast. It like, really if you're is. Into what we talk about yeah. on here, all the technical, all the, this is the name of this cinematographer, yeah. this is the name of this composer. If you are into all the info dumps we do here on this show,
you might want to check out the studio.
You might want to check out the studio with Seth Rogen.
And we've only been two episodes in, and I want to watch more of it, but we're just, there's no time. There's we have another podcast to record after this one, so we should probably get after it. But going back to Kill Bill, you said that your favorite fight sequence is the one in the restaurant, or do you have another?
Favorite fight sequence would be in the restaurant, but it was, it's in the restaurant, but it's after the black and white mm-hmm. part of it, and it all goes back to color, and then the manager turns the lights off and
yeah.
the blue pops up, and then you have the silhouettes fighting with the blue yeah. in the background. I really love that fight sequence because it's not edited too much for cutting around.
Mm-hmm. I got the fight choreography.
They stay on it
yeah.
for a good amount of time.
That's all Zoe Bell too.
And that's another yeah. thing. This movie is one of the, I think the first movie that he used Zoe Bell mm-hmm. in as a stunt performer.
Yeah.
And then has since used her in 3 or 4 different movies as an actress.
Mm-hmm.
And one of which he gets to play a stunt performer, an actor at the same time.
Yeah. Tarantino loves film, and he makes movies that are love letters to this medium that he loves so much, and to things that he loves, such as Hollywood, which is, you know, Japanese film.
He just loves Westerns. Film in yeah, he likes all genres.
And that's why I obviously haven't seen every single one of his films, and there are films that I prefer more over the others because art is subjective. But the man's a great fucking filmmaker, and I'm glad that we have him. I'm glad that although he's somewhat problematic, he's actually not all that problematic. Like, other than just his weird thing with his feet. It's gross. I don't know, but it's fine that if you like it, but then why are you making us all have to see it? Like, I don't want Uma Thurman's feet that large in front of my face. But you know, he owns a cinema in LA where he shows not only his films, but other old classic films. He is out there just loving film and having fun, and I'm glad for it. I am. You know, we've watched 5 of his movies so far, and I am walking away with nothing but a deeper appreciation for him and his art and what an artist he is.
It's fun to see his love for film, especially because I don't have the time.
No, or the energy.
To go back and watch those kind of old films and see those old actors and appreciate some of that music that he appreciates. And instead, he gets to take all those different elements of things that he likes and put it in one of his own movies,
mm-hmm.
which then lets me get to appreciate the music that he likes and yeah. the
there are a lot of songs off the soundtrack that I was likes. Like, I need to put this on some regular rotation. Like, these are some legit songs. So, yeah, Tarantino, good on him, I guess. Is it ranking time?
I guess.
Sure.
Maggie.
Yes.
Kill Bill as yes. a whole.
As a whole. The whole bloody shebang. Affair. Okay.
What would you give it out of 5 stars?
I'd give it... Oh, I'd give it a 4. 4.5? I'm going to stick with 4. It gets 4 stars for me.
Okay.
You know, not my absolute favorite Tarantino film. Not my least favorite. It's a solid in the middle run. I think it's beautifully put together. I think the second half is a little, you know, a little long. Just a little too long. In fact, we paused it at one point, and I was like, we still have 40 fucking minutes of this movie? Jesus Christ. But it turns out, 10 minutes of that is the credits at the end. But, yeah. It's
true. They're great credits.
They're great credits, but they're long. But, yeah, I give this movie a solid 4 stars. What about you, my dear?
So on my Letterboxd,
yeah.
I have my top 5 Tarantino films.
Mm-hmm.
Number five is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Fair.
Number four is Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Number three, Django Unchained.
Okay.
Number two, Jackie Brown.
All right.
Number one,
Kill Bill.
Is Kill Bill. All
right. Yeah. So this is a five star
movie for me. This is my favorite Tarantino film as a whole. The whole Bloody Affair is my favorite from him. I like every single one of his movies. Some more than others. Obviously, that's how you rank things.
Yeah,
that's what happens when you rank things.
It is what happens when you rank things.
Are they all 5-star movies? No. Are they all above 3 stars? Absolutely.
Yeah, I
believe they are all above 3 stars. I think his lowest one is probably
Reservoir Dogs.
No, not Planet Terror, but
Death Proof.
Death Proof.
Yeah,
I think Death Proof is probably his weakest film, but that's still like a 3.5 for me, and I can still find the fun Tarantino in it. It's just not, the story's just like, that was fun.
Of the 5 movies that we've watched, so Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Django Unchained, Inglourious Bastards, Pulp Fiction, Kill Bill.
Yes.
For me, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is my favorite of those 5.
Yeah, that's your favorite.
Kill Bill's your favorite of those 5 as well?
Yeah.
What would be your least favorite?
Least favorite of the...
Of the 5 that we've watched.
Oh, the 5 that we've watched.
Yes. If we had to rank these 5.
Yeah, the 5 that we've watched.
I would probably put Pulp Fiction down there. I would probably do Pulp Fiction, Kill Bill, Once Upon a Time, is how I think I would rate, you know, from lowest to highest, in terms of just the 5 that we've watched.
Well, on my Letterboxd list, yeah. The 5th one that of the 5 we've watched
is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Well, that's number 4.
Oh.
Because we haven't watched Jackie Brown.
No.
So I have to skip number 2 and go straight to 3, which is Django.
Yeah.
But number 5 on the list is Inglourious Bastards. Yeah.
I need to watch Jackie Brown again. I need to watch Jackie Brown again so badly. It's been so long, but I remember loving the fuck out of that movie. And I think it's
a fantastic movie.
Oh, yeah.
Movie.
I remember it being just phenomenally great. And
not a lot of people give, because it's not super action-y.
Yeah.
You know, there's...
Maybe I do like talky Tarantino. Maybe I just don't like the talky Kill Bill Tarantino. Because Jackie Brown is fucking incredible. But Once Upon a Time, I love that movie. With all my heart. I would watch it right now, even though we don't have the time. And the movie's 10 hours long.
Let's go watch it.
Okay.
So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it.
You're being expelled, and now you guys, look what you're doing. This is fantastic. This is a great message for young people.
It is. Yeah. Do whatever you want. It's going to work out in the end.
He was talking about being a troublemaker in school.
Yeah.
And at one time had to have like a car sun visor used as a partition to keep him separated from the rest of the class. And then he got expelled from school one time.
Oscar!
And that he was a troublemaker. And then Adam Driver sitting right next to him, who said that he beat up a kid one time and got kicked out of school. And so the lesson of the moral of the story is,
Do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want, yeah. And you'll succeed in life.
Fucking Adam Driver and Oscar Isaac. Bullshit pancakes, my beloved. Ugh. That joke is for one person and one person only.
And it's not even me.
Nope, it's not you. It's the true love of my life. God, Conan O'Brien is so hot. Oscar Isaac is obviously so hot. And Adam Driver could destroy me, that large mountain of a man. But Conan, whew. We made out for the first time while watching Conan O'Brien.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, the very first time we made out.
Important part to that in Team America.
Team America World Police.
Very important to our relationship and why we're here now doing this podcast.
And Mom Spaghetti. So, would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made Kill Bill, the whole Bloody Affair, a better film?
No, but I would like to see Oscar in a Tarantino film.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my God.
Fucking just absolutely. Like, what I have loved to see that.
I know Tarantino picks from the actors that he's worked with in the past.
But not always.
And picks, and like a lot of older, if they haven't been in a one in the past, it's like older
character actors.
Actors, which I respect and love about Tarantino.
Yeah, Oscar's, he's a leading man, but he's also a character actor.
He is.
Like, he's not as big in Hollywood as, like, fucking Glenn Powell is at the moment.
No, absolutely not.
No.
Unfortunately.
No, yeah, that's true.
He should be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I completely agree he should be. But which is why I'm like, you know, Glenn Powell may not be in a Tarantino movie, but maybe
Oscar Isaac could. I would enjoy that thoroughly, but I don't think that Kill Bill would have been improved with his perfect face.
Well, second question then, if Tarantino had casted Oscar Isaac in his movie Kill Bill 1 or 2.
There's only one role that would make any sense, which would be the Michael Parks as a Latin American man character.
The Esteban?
Yeah, Esteban, because, I mean, Michael Parks is not Hispanic, as far as I'm aware.
He was born in California what last names appeared to be very white.
Yeah, and he's got, you know, his skin's tinted a slight shade of brown, and he's doing quite the accent.
I kind of appreciate that they didn't make him really look Mexican, not necessarily.
Not really.
He did just look like he was an old leathery.
He was leathery.
Because he spends
so much time in the sun.
Probably spent a lot of time in the sun in the desert.
Fucking speaking of leathery, David Carradine was made out of leather. God damn it. His face was just...
I mean, that's the oldest... That was the oldest that I had seen David Carradine, because when I watched the Kung Fu
TV
show, he was like a baby boy, but...
fucking, that man is made of a hard leather, but...
you know, some...
But no, Oscar should have been the Esteban character, you know, just to give... You know, obviously in 2003, it was a little different. You could have... essentially whitewashing in Hollywood. There's still whitewashing characters in Hollywood. But if chosen, I think I would have put Oscar into that tiny little part just because he would have been perfect for the role. And also just so very hot. I wouldn't have liked him as Bill because he's too evil. I would not have liked him as Buck or the trucker because fuck that. That is not my Oscar Isaac. And, you know, Michael Madsen did such a great job as Bud that...
Even though...
You know, I don't know where else I would put Oscar.
I know you don't want him to be Buck, but his character from Sucker Punch was, like, borderline Buck.
Yeah, no, his character from Sucker Punch is awful, but he sings.
He sings, so it's okay.
It's not, but he does sing in that movie, and I listen to that song a lot. Love is a Drug, baby. I'm so in love with him that I might watch the Jesus Christ film one day. But, like, it would be, like, me at home, alone, high, and I'm just like, fuck it, let's do this. Or with you, you know, making fun of it, because it's, like, a time-traveling fucking Charles Dickens movie, but the cast is stacked.
Uma Thurman is
in. Uma Thurman's in, so...
It all connects back
to... Kenneth Branagh, my beloved, so... But, yeah.
Esteban.
And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Kill Bill, and we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. We are actively coming to the end of this first part of the podcast, which is insane, but we still have some fun movies ahead, including next week, which will be Shutter Island. It is our fourth and last Scorsese film, and it's also a movie that Caveman and I saw in theaters once. So it's going to be a lot of fun to revisit that film, because I remember liking it, but I don't remember much of it. So join us next week for that. But until then, you can always find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can also find us at on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast. And you can always write us any of your thoughts, comments, questions, and concerns at MovieMinglePod@gmail.com. As ever, thank you so much for listening. Feel free to leave a 5-star review or whatever you feel we deserve on your podcast platform of choice. And spread the word, because even though we're almost done, we're not going anywhere. So... stay tuned for what's to come. Take good care of yourselves. Be safe out there. And remember, if you see the pussy wagon, run and go mingle. Bye.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach.
What's that bomb? I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. Toga. Toga.